Skiles Electric presents WILO Ag Day on AM 1570, 96.9 WILO, Boone 102.7, and streaming live on HoosierlandTV.com. We're excited to bring you interviews with industry experts from all areas of agriculture. We invite you to join the conversation by calling 765-659-3338. Our hope is to provide valuable insight into the diverse world of agriculture. Ag Day is proudly sponsored by Skiles Electric, Community Foundation of Howard, Carroll, and Clinton County, the Farmers Bank, Wampler Services Incorporated, Rossville Consolidated School District, Drago, Indiana, and First Farmers Bank and Trust. Now let's join WILO Ag Day.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to Ag Day here on WILO and Boone 1027 along with Hoosierland TV. Right now we're in the studio, and Adam, I'm going to let you, I'm here with my co-host Adam Shanks from Purdue University. Adam, I'm going to let you introduce our first guest.
All right. Good morning, everyone. We should have Dr. Michael Langemeyer on the horn with us this morning. Are you there, Dr. Langemeyer?
I'm here, Adam.
Fantastic. Let's kick things off this morning. Could you maybe just introduce yourself to the audience and tell a little bit about what your role is there with Purdue?
Yes, I'm a professor of agriculture economics, and my primary role is outreach and extension. I cover many different topics, but transition planning, cost of production, agriculture finance are some of the primary topics that I cover.
Fantastic. Well, I really appreciate you taking some time today to visit with us here on this Ag Day program. I come and saw you speak there a few weeks ago at an event, and maybe just give us a little bit of an overview, of what is, for folks listening, what is the Ag Economy Barometer, and maybe a little bit about what story it's telling right now.
Yes, the Ag Economy Barometer is a monthly producer sentiment survey. We present the results every month of the first Tuesday of every month. The survey takes place the middle of the month before, and so this week we are actually making phone calls, or the firm in Kansas City that we contract with is making phone calls to farmers, and we will release the results the first Tuesday of April. We've been doing this since late 2015, so we have over 10 years under our belt in terms of working on this producer survey. And the first 6 months of the survey, which is essentially the fall of 2015 and the first 3 months of 2016, are the base period. And so that base period has an index of 100. And so most of the time, the index has been above that base period because that base period was a period of tight net returns, just like we have right now. And so that's just a little bit of background. The survey is U.S. producers, and so it's the entire U.S., both crop and livestock producers. And I'll talk more about the difference in sentiment between crop and livestock producers here. But if you look at the primary Ag Economy Barometer Index, it's actually increased a little bit from February to January. It increased from 113 to 116, but it is down about 20 points since December, and it's down even more than that if you look at it February 25 to February 26. If you look at that time period, it's down over 30 points, and so certainly sentiment is quite a bit lower right now than it was for most of 2025, and I really point to a couple different things there. One of them is we do have some very tight returns in the crop sector, and that's 70% of the people that we survey are crop producers, and so it's not real surprising that the sentiment will be down a little bit. But more importantly, or just as importantly, is the sentiment is down long term. We've really split the questions into questions that are more current oriented, looking at this year compared to last year, this year compared to next year. But we also have questions related to what agriculture might look like 5 years from now. And that's what's a little bit disconcerting to me, is the sentiment related to future expectations is down quite a bit. It's down 45 points since February 25. And I really point to a couple things there. I think people are losing a little bit of confidence in the long-run policy environment. We asked a couple questions related to their thoughts about trade, for example, the direction that the U.S. policy is going, and it's not that they didn't answer those fairly affirmatively, but the sentiment is down compared to what it was in most of 25. And another question that kind of points to that is one of the questions related to land value, what land values might do, might look like 5 years from now. And there's less optimism regarding where land values might be 5 years from now. And so that's kind of the basic story of where the ag economy barometer is. One other thing I do want to note is there's a tremendous difference in sentiment between the crop producers and livestock producers, as you'd expect. Most of our livestock producers are beef. There's 30% livestock producers, and probably two-thirds to three-fourths of those are beef producers. And the beef sector has been doing really well. They're much more optimistic about where agriculture is heading in the crop sector right now.
So just for a little clarification, you said that there's less optimism in land. Does that mean that they think land values are going to decrease, or they are less optimistic it's going to cost more to obtain or operate land?
They're still overwhelmingly think land values are going to go up. It's just a smaller percent think land values are going to go up.
Okay.
And so the majority of producers still think land values are going to go up 12 months from now, are going to be higher 12 months now, and 5 years from now. It's just not quite as high a percentage I think they're going to increase compared to what it was in 25. So thanks for the clarification there.
Yeah.
Is there any concern out there amongst producers as far as the loss of land? More and more companies are coming in and buying out land and putting it into other uses than production agriculture. Are you hearing anything about that?
We haven't asked that question specifically in the survey, but the answer to that would be yes. There's always concerns related to that. When you think about development, when you think about solar panels, when you think about the development coming out of Indy or other large cities like that, it doesn't necessarily take the marginal ground. Those concerns persist across the Corn Belt.
So if we're you talked briefly about the sediment with beef producers. And the beef market and raising beef is a highly volatile thing right now. A lot of risk involved in going long on feeder calves or if you should sell the calves that are coming off getting ready to be born here this spring. So I guess kind of if you could talk a little bit about. What do you see or what are your thoughts on someone, wanting to maybe get into the beef market or how do you see, the profitability and the long run aspects on raising beef right now?
Well, when you look at the beef sector, you have to split it up into at least three different types of producers. The first one would be the cow-calf. They're primarily, raise the calves, and then sell the calves in the fall if it's a spring calving herd. Then the other group is the people that background the cattle, take the calves and raise them up to the feeder weight, and then there's the people in the feedlots that take the feeder cattle and put them in the feedlot. So the reason why I talk about those three different sectors, the sector that is doing well at this phase of the beef cycle is the cow-calf. Both the backrunners and the finishing cattle, it really depends on what you purchase those cattle for. And calf prices and feeder prices right now are very high. And so, as you said, that's a very risky business. It always is risky, but it's particularly risky now when you're paying very high prices, compared to historical prices for calves if you're a backgrounder, and very high prices for the feeder cattle if you're putting them in the feedlot. So the riskiness is really in the feeder side. The cow-calf side, there's not as much risk there. But one of the reasons why the cow herd hasn't been growing, and I think you hit the nail on the head there, is when you've got heifers that are valued so much on the market, you're tempted to sell them rather than retain them in your herd. And that's a really tough question. But I think I've listened to Daryl Peel at Oklahoma State, for example, who's really an expert in the cattle sector. I follow him very closely, and I think this would be consistent with his thinking, is I think the beef sector is going to be fairly strong for several years to come, because it takes a long time for the herd to increase. And during that period, particularly the cow-calf sector, is going to look at some really good returns. And so from that standpoint, I think it makes sense for cow-calf producers to retain some of those heifers, because it's not like this is just going to last, you know, 12 months or so. It looks like this is going to be several years of fairly good prices, and that makes it a little easier to retain those heifers and maybe build those cow herds a little bit, start building those cow herds a little bit.
Again, we're speaking with Dr. Michael Langemeyer, ag econ from Purdue University. Dr. Langemeyer, you said that a percentage of the livestock producers that were in your survey were the beef. That was the higher concentration. But what were some of the other producers? What were they raising?
Dairy and swine are also in there, but they're only about 5% each. We try to match value added in U.S. agriculture, and so heavy weight on corn, soybean producers. About 55% are corn, soybean producers. Another 15% or so are wheat. And then we have some cotton producers, so that's kind of the split there. But corn and soybean, we usually talk about the corn and soybean in our reports quite a bit, because that's the largest group.
What are you hearing? I know you have a small percentage of dairy producers, but what are you hearing from that sector? What are their sentiments on how things are going?
Well, I don't follow that industry near as close as I do the other industries, and we haven't asked any questions specifically related to the dairy industry, and so I'd be sticking my neck out a little too far if I tried to highlight their sentiment separately from the rest.
When you're talking about corn and soybean production, are they concerned? Is the climate part of the concern in their sentiment? I know they're looking at prices, and of course, I mean, prices are. We're riding such a roller coaster in agriculture right now. It's not even funny. And I know we talk about how much is in storage, how much is sitting at the ports, what's been sold on the markets, what hasn't been sold. What are the largest concerns that you're hearing from the grain producers?
Well, we always ask a question about their biggest concerns, and the biggest concerns, probably ever since COVID, have been high input costs and low prices. No big surprise there, right? Let's talk about the corn and soybean separately, and I'll talk a little bit about the balance sheet, if I may. The corn balance sheet is a tough nut to crack, because we have such a big supply, and so when you have worries about stuff sitting on the port, those kinds of issues, that's a big concern, because when you look at the demand side, the demand has been a real success story. We have strong demand from the feed industry, strong demand from ethanol production, and really strong demand from the export side. And so we don't want that strong demand from the exports to be slowed down, because we need to move that corn, because we produce so much corn. And our stocks-to-use situation for corn is substantially higher than average. The average stocks to use is about 11%, and we're sitting at 13%, and that's really putting a lid on prices when you talk about corn. And so the demand's critical there to try to move some of that corn so that there's not such a big carryover after next year's crop. The soybean is a different situation, because the soybean stocks are a little higher than average, but not much. And so that's one of the reasons why we saw such an increase in soybean prices from the first of this year to recently. I mean, I know soybean side slid a bit here in the last week, slid quite a bit actually in the last week, but we're still substantially higher than we were in January 1, and that's because any positive news we have related to demand is going to boost soybean prices, because the stocks to use is not as high as what it is for corn. And so what we're really watching now, and that's what the market's going to be watching here, is the planting intentions report that will be put out later this month. Specifically how much corn and soybeans are producers in the U.S. Going to grow next year. And hopefully the corn acreage will be down substantially, so that we don't make a large corn supply even larger as we move through next harvest season.
Yeah, of course, I know part of that is dictated by weather, And let's face it, Mother Nature's not been the kindest person to us here lately.
No, it has not.
But that does determine on how much sometimes you have to convert and switch over to the other crop just because the deadline's passed, the dates are passed and the moisture content and everything else.
Yes, and that's particularly true when you're looking at planting corn and soybeans, where a lot of the shifting comes late term. It's not necessarily here; it's in the Western Corn Belt, particularly the Dakotas. Even the planting intentions report, if they say I'm going to produce this much corn and this much soybeans, that's a moving target for them because as if the weather doesn't cooperate, they switch horses. They switch crops up there, and so you're right. I mean, the weather's going to dictate quite a bit what that relative acreage is going to end up being.
Are you seeing the possibility of any relief in sight for those input costs, or do you see them continuously going up, especially now that? And I don't want to blame the tariffs for everything because you just can't. I mean, the costs were going up before the tariffs hit. But they're definitely not helping because some of our fertilizers and some of our chemicals came in from internationally. They're not here. They're not produced here. So that's got to hurt.
Yeah. Until recently, this recent conflict with Iran specifically, the input costs were similar to slightly lower than what they were last year overall. Now, fertilizer prices, nitrogen prices, were up 10% year to year. Some of the other inputs were not up. Obviously, if the total cost was relatively flat, but fertilizer was up even before this conflict. And so, I really worry about where fertilizer prices are heading, along with fuel prices. That's certainly going to add to the break even cost. And then cash rents have been pretty. They haven't increased, but they haven't decreased either. And so that's another cost item that I'm watching very carefully. But to answer your question specifically, I just don't see our break-even prices declining anytime soon. We're elevated since COVID, and they just seem to stay elevated. So it's hard to foresee what's going to cause those break-even prices to decline down the road. Probably the one that I'm looking at the closest is cash rent.
You were going to be updating that balance sheet, and unfortunately, the Iran conflict was one thing I was wanting to bring up and its impact on our fuel and fertilizer costs. Where do you see that break even point being now on your new balance sheet?
Well, I just have the price impact that of the initial conflict, like a week after the conflict, and already then the fertilizer prices were up quite a bit. But I'm really waiting on tomorrow we're actually going to get an updated report out of Illinois looking at fertilizer prices, and I'm a little scared to look at that because I think fertilizer prices are going to be up quite a bit, and that's going to take our break even above five. We were slightly below five. But I think with the increase in fertilizer costs, particularly urea and anhydrous, and the increase in fuel prices, I think we're going to be up over five, and that'll take us probably similar to last year and 2 years ago, because before that we were a little bit below. Now we're going to be slightly above those, and so it's a little bit discouraging, but that's where we're at.
But where is break even on beans sitting on your balance sheet now?
On the beans, they were right at about $11.75. The break even price that's probably going to move the most is corn because of the urea and anhydrous.
Correct.
That's where the biggest movements I think are going to be. And so I've seen a discussion on the website and from industry analysis. This could move us away from corn acres slightly, not here, but in the Western Corn Belt. We'll see. Usually when you see shifts like this late in the season, you do see a slight reduction in corn acres. And certainly from what I told you about the balance sheet for corn, that would be good news for corn.
Yes. Yeah.
If we planted another 1 to 2 million less acres of corn than we thought we were going to.
So we got just a few minutes left. What are kind of your strategies or advice you would give to producers, you know, as we look at their marketing the 2026 crop here going forward, or even forwarding out with some 2027 crops? What kind of tools or strategies would you recommend looking at?
I've got some pretty detailed reports on the Center for Commercial Agriculture website. Corn marketing strategy, comparing corn marketing strategies, comparing soybean marketing strategies. And so I encourage people to look for details on there. But to make a long story short, when you're looking at marketing the 26 corn and soybean crop, storage typically pays. And so particularly if you have on-farm storage, holding some of that crop until the spring usually pays. You usually see a bump in prices, and after the first of the year, that will more than pay for that storage. That doesn't mean you sell all of your crop in the spring, but certainly selling part of the crop in the fall and holding part of that crop into the spring is usually a pretty good strategy. Now, if you want to mix that with some hedging, I encourage producers to look at those papers in a little bit more detail, because we have a couple of hedge strategies that are also included in those publications. Because I'm primarily involved in ag finance, I want to talk a little bit about some things to do on the financial side. Input costs are leading the pain. When you look at the biggest concern, it's input costs, and we just talked about that. There's even more concern now because of the fuel and fertilizer. Where the fuel and fertilizer prices are going, particularly nitrogen, and so I encourage people to create enterprise budgets and use that in their marketing plans. I think that's very important. We also have a tool related to long run cash rent decisions. Take a look at that, and then another thing: if you haven't been calculating repayment capacity. Or if you're not real sure how you would calculate that, I encourage people to look at our publications related to repayment capacity, because what that'll help you understand is to see how close am I to being able to cover my owner withdrawals and my term debt payments next fall. So this is kind of a future oriented exercise. Look at your current cash flow projections. Does it look like I'm likely to be able to cover my term debt payments? If I'm not, what is plan B? Is plan B to take some of my liquidity that I have in stored grain and maybe selling the grain earlier so I'm making those debt payments? What is my plan B? In this environment, that's extremely important to have contingency plan. So kind of a cash flow projection, that's my best guesstimate. And then a contingency plan. What would happen if price is lower than what it looks like right now? Would I still be able to make my payments? And if I can't, what would I need to do in order to make those payments? And so doing some of those future financial projections in this environment is extremely important.
And where is it producers or folks can find those tools?
The Center for Commercial Agriculture website has publications on liquidity, repayment capacity, marketing strategies, publications like that, as well as publications on the basic financial statements. And so if you're struggling a little bit about what to put on your balance sheet, what to put on your cash flow, what to include in your cash flow and your income statement, I have some examples on the website.
Well, Dr. Langemeyer, we appreciate you taking time to speak with us and educate our listeners on Ag Econ, and hopefully everybody's paying attention and they go to the website and they get those tools, because I think everybody is going to need them, especially the way things seem to be trending.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Mike. Dr. Langemeyer, we really appreciate the time this morning, and we'll look forward to our future conversations.
Take care, guys.
Thank you.
You too.
Bye.
All right. That was Dr. Langemeyer, Ag Econ at Purdue University. We're going to take a quick break, and then we will be back with Drew Kripe and Jared Stillwell from the Farmers Bank to talk a little more about those balance sheets and talk a little more finance here and for producers and what they need to be looking at here on Ag Day on WILO and Boone 102.7 along with Hoosierland TV.